Horror movies are more than just empty thrills. They are a mirror that reflects the darker sides of our culture and our psyche. Each episode, we will go beyond the first cut and discuss the themes and topics that hide below the surface.
I'm Dave, Professor of Communication.
And I'm Vince, Professor of Psychology. Welcome to A Dark Impression.
Welcome back to A Dark Impression. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, welcome, Vince.
So today we are talking about monsters. This is one of those topics that I've thought about for a while in terms of how has the types of monsters that are used in scary movies evolved over the years, and what do they tell us and the viewers about what's going on in that culture. So tell me what you fear, and I'll tell you who you are, from the vampires and werewolves and the mummy of the original classics up to the most recent offerings from Barbarian and other movies. Monsters have changed a lot in the past, say, 100 years. I think they are typically a very good reflection of what the public wants, because that's what the public, and I think it would be interesting for us today to dig into why are monsters so interesting? What makes a monster a good monster? Are there some that really stand out compared to others?
I really like what you were saying about how monsters are a product of their time, because I really think they are. If you look back, even 10, 20 years, monsters can look a bit cheesy, dated.
Oh, yeah.
And that's part of the fun of them, I think. But if you think back and when you're watching these films when they came out, they don't feel cheesy or dated. They sometimes do, but the really good ones don't. Like thinking exactly. Back to like Bela Lugosi's Dracula. Bela Lugosi's Dracula, I mean, I wasn't around when it came out, but it was incredibly well received. Now we look at it, I'll show it to my students, and they'll laugh at how comical it is, because it has become a caricature of Dracula. Nosferatu, which I saw the first time in college, I think, and I was like, man. Actually, no. The first time I saw Nosferatu was on an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark, and it scared the bejesus out of me. The first time I saw the film was in college, and I was like, oh, that guy from Are You Afraid of the Dark, that still looks pretty good. I showed it to my students. They're like, what's the guy from SpongeBob doing in this movie? And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't even realize, because I hadn't seen SpongeBob. I mean, I know SpongeBob, but it was after my time. And so the meaning of these monsters can change over time. And I think that, like you said, the current iterations of them, something like Barbarian, for example, is really interesting, because in a few years, in, you know, 2032 or something, people will look back and they'll be like, oh, this 10-year-old movie, oh man, that monster looks so cheap. Right. But they'll still be afraid of their monsters, which in another 10 or 20 years will also look cheap. But I do like the popularity of how these old monsters are coming back around. So you have Robert Eggers making a Nosferatu remake, which I'm super excited about.
Yes.
You have a new, I guess, reborn Godzilla franchise that started off a bit tacky, but I think it's kind of finding its place.
Oh, and there's Tom Cruise's movie, The Mummy.
We're going to
skip
that, edit that out of the fun.
What? It's a good reminder. It's a good reminder that classics are classics for a reason. And you can't just go and try to remake them in any way that you want and hope to be successful. There's a profound attachment that people have to their monsters, to the mythology that surrounds the stories that we tell about that. There's a profound attachment to that. And I think that's partly what made the success of that early iteration of the Universal classics, because those literary works had been around for a while. People were attached to the idea of the vampire, the werewolf, that those were present in the culture.
Right.
And so to put them on the silver screen, that was must have been like a wonderful achievement. I think to try to just recapture that and just reuse it instead of adapting it to something that resonates with modern sensibilities, I think that was a big mistake of the universal, the dark universal universe to begin with.
And to your point, the bigger issue, or one of the big issues rather, I guess I have with the Mummy remake is that they tried to make it an action film and the original mm-hmm. isn't. And I think that there's a lot of, it's a cop-out to make mm-hmm. something like that could have these really rich experiences, even with Tom Cruise. I like Tom Cruise enough and I think he can act, but you don't give him the chance to do so in an action movie. Like you just go right. see Tom Cruise run around for a little while, which is fun, but it doesn't necessarily make for a transformative experience, or, you know, one that you're remaking a film that's almost 100 years old and you're not really mm-hmm. doing it justice by having Tom Cruise run around.
No, it kind of plays around with the DNA of those movies, which is, it's interesting. I was thinking about those original monsters. All of them are variation on a transformed or corrupted human. You have the vampire, which essentially looks human. You have the werewolf, who's a human that turns into something else. You have the mummy that used to be a human. The creature from the Black Lagoon even has kind of human-like characteristics. It's interesting to see how that was kind of the original definition of what was monstrous. And then that has evolved as we realize that we could put more things on screen than just a transformed human. But to the point where just taking an animal, like a shark in Jaws, made it into a monster. Even though, to be fair, if we really wanted to find something in water that's terrifying, it should have been a hippo.
Yeah, they'll get you.
More often than sharks will. Hippos are terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. Man, people, the real monsters. Yeah, that's what we learn from these monster movies.
But that's the thing, is you have that evolution from something that looks human, but that's transformed aesthetically, or, you know, add some hair or add some texture, and that was it. But still they moved somewhat in the same way as humans. And then you jump, and I'm going to jump in time, but yeah, The Exorcist and American Werewolf in London, when practical effects actually became much better. And now you have sequences where it's not just a static creature. There's transformation. There's the movements becomes kind of part of what's monstrous about the character.
Right.
I was thinking, the scene where Reagan is climbing down the stairs, doing kind of the bridge, but with the head just spun around, or when her head is just spinning around in bed, or that absolutely amazing transformation sequence in American Werewolf in London, all done with practical effects. I think that there's something there that was captured that speaks to the fact that we don't just react to what's purely aesthetic or image based, but movement is also something that we're looking for. And when something doesn't move right, that evokes fear, that evokes discomfort. That was part of what that scene with Reagan was so, why it was so impactful.
Yeah. Yeah. Just going back a few, I guess, minute or so, talking about practical effects, there's these big moments in monster film history where it goes through transformations, usually related to something mm-hmm. around practical effects. So you have the first, not that practical effects didn't exist in the silent film era, like through the mid to late 20s, they did. But you have mm-hmm. this really big push towards practical effects in the 30s, and this is where the Universal monster movies start coming out in full right. force. And they become super popular because the practical effects at the time were leagues ahead of where they were even a decade before with Nosferatu, which I still think Nosferatu looks good, mm-hmm. but it looks like a person.
Yes.
So then you're getting the Wolfman, you're getting the Mummy, you're getting Dracula, and they're all using practical effects to mm-hmm. to sell this. And you see that go into the 50s, and then in the 50s it starts to become campy, and they're using the same practical effects they use in the 30s, but they're not as effective because everybody can now see the wires holding up the bats and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. it ends up looking a bit tacky, and you get a lot of that pushed into like the B-movie territory, which are wonderful in and of themselves. And the 50s into the 60s have this move away from practical effects that then comes back in the late 70s, where the technology has increased to a point that now the effects, like you're saying, The Exorcist, American Werewolf, they look real enough that an audience doesn't right. feel like they're dated anymore. That continues into the 80s. 80s has like these great special effects. I love like thinking about Gremlins and stuff like that. I love the special effects.
Yes.
90s moves away from it. And now we're kind of in this slow build back to using practical effects. The 2000s were like, hey, we can just use CGI for everything, which they're very quickly realizing doesn't work. It works right now. Yep. And then in a year when CGI is better, it looks mm-hmm. dated, and then nobody wants to watch the movie. So there's now people are figuring out like, okay, if I use these types of CGI to enhance the practical mm-hmm. effects, then it's going to last a lot longer because you're still the practical effects are doing the heavy lifting. And without those, yep. it doesn't matter what you're doing. As soon as the technology increases enough or becomes better, which doesn't take a long time, mm-hmm. it just ruins that whole film. And it, you know, it becomes hard to watch some of the films that like, oh yeah, I'll check that out.
I know.
Oh God, no, that looks atrocious.
Yeah. Which is, it really helps determine which movies are going to age well.
Right.
I mean, Jaws is still really good.
It still works. Yeah.
It really much is a case of less is more.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. You were mentioning there's one movie that came out early 2000 that I think went completely against the grain, and that movie may have some of my favorite monsters, and it's the adaptation of the video game Silent Hill that I thought there's a lot of monsters in there that were not, they could easily have gone for CGI because it was available, but instead of going for CGI, they hired professional dancers to try to find ways for their humanoid characters, and most of that was just prosthetics and practical effects, but how to move in a way that is not human.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that in terms of, because we have this capacity to detect biological motion so easily, to then try to deconstruct that and make something terrifying because A, the creature has no arms, but B, because that creature does not move the way that your nervous system expects it to. I thought that was actually really clever. And I don't know that that would have been so much more expensive than, I mean, the rest of the movie was kind of eh, but that aspect of the movie I thought was so refreshing after a few years of terrible and cheap looking CGI that really is only interesting if you see the movie in the theater and the screen is so big that you're not focusing on anything. So you're not actually looking at any kind of visual effect of quality. You're just detecting movement, as opposed to what Silent Hill did, which is like, yeah, you can focus on my monsters because my monsters are real. Dun, dun, dun. And what's terrifying is not like all these tentacles or whatnot. It's just, it's in the movement. So instead of the image, it's the, I thought, yeah, movement over image for something that becomes terrifying.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, especially with the practical effects. I mean, you can only do so much. And I mean, there's really wonderful makeup and prosthetic artists out there. But mm-hmm. if you don't have somebody that can fully embody that part, then it's not going to sell even the best makeup. So you really need, you need to think about all of those things. Can we talk quickly about, I think my favorite current monster movie maker, Guillermo del Toro.
Yes.
He has the best, just for my money, the best monsters, the most innovative and interesting. And he slows down the pace of the movies too. So you can really watch and appreciate the work and the art that went into creating these beasts.
So which one comes to mind? I have my two right now that come to mind in terms of, I think, my favorites of his creations. But what would you go for?
The hand-eye guy?
Yes. The pale guy, I think, in Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
That's one of my two.
Oh, my gosh.
That's so freaking creepy.
I was blown away. I saw that in the theater, and I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
It didn't need to have a ton of blood coming out. It was actually relatively simple, but everything that should have been in specific places was just off. It was off just by a little bit, except for the eyes in the hands, but everything else was kind of just a little off.
Right.
That it was terrifying without kind of breaking the narrative or without interrupting your temporary suspension of disbelief. There's something really interesting, I think, about the development of his monsters that are not just there to elicit disgust or fear or anything primal. It's kind of confusing because they elicit a lot of different emotions and with this kind of overarching threat, but still kind of you want to look at it and then you want to run away from it.
Right.
But then you want to stop and look at it again.
Horribly beautiful.
Dave.
I know.
The poet. Deep. Nicely done. One thing, though, is that all those monsters are human-looking, anthropomorphic. They have arms and legs and all that. I think what came out of what you were mentioning, this kind of explosion in the capacity to do practical effects, is that we moved away in the 70s and 80s, as we moved away from just this stereotypical monster that's just something from nature that's been corrupted, and we moved to something that was much more alien looking. So I'm thinking about the Xenomorph from the Alien franchise, but especially the Thing from The Thing.
Right.
I don't know, and correct me if I'm being ignorant, but I don't know of, like, maybe The Blob before, but a movie before that really just, that had that cosmic horror, that amorphous quality to the monster.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Fair. Had that kind of impact.
Oh, I don't think it had the same impact.
There's so many, like,
what about Attack of the Killer Tomato, the classic?
Yes, but they're still kind of trapped in a single shape. I thought what was really cool about The Thing is it latches on to anything that exists and kind of corrupts it in a way that is, like,
I'll give you that. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. No,
like the dog.
The Thing's a great monster.
The dog. Yes. John Carpenter had a good vision for that too.
Yeah.
Not that he used them a lot, but like The Thing or the creatures that are briefly seen at the end of In the Mouth of Madness. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that, which is interesting because based on kind of the cosmic horror, Lovecraftian cool of horror, but it's the unnameable that now you have to translate into a nameable and visual medium. So there's a challenge there.
Sure.
But I think in those cases, it was good partly because it wasn't very much revealed.
Mm-hmm.
It was mostly hinted at.
Yeah, like The Mist. The Mist did a really good job of that.
Yes.
But that was later.
So. Yeah, but you know what? I think it did so well because it did resist the temptation of showing instead of using the monsters as this kind of threatening backdrop.
Right. And the ending of that? Oh, brutal.
Don't.
What do you think the next maybe 10, 20 years looks like for monsters?
That's hard to say, because I think what we, in the last few years, I think what we have found more threatening was something that sci-fi might actually portray better. I think there's a lot of cultural fears around. I think we're going to see a couple of movies that are going to come out with inspired by the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Or people are just going to stay away from it because it's been done before. Like, what else are you going to do than zombies? Which are another interesting classic monster, but been done. I think it might revisit something like what The Descent showed. So this kind of hidden buried, unknown area of our planet that shows something that exists there that we were not aware of. I think we're going to move away from the traditional monsters. I think there's a zombie fatigue because they were so popular not so long ago. Mm-hmm. I think the kaiju big monster is fun, but I don't think it has that terrifying impact. We're essentially just watching an action movie between two big creatures and humans are stuck in the middle, which reminds me of Superman or Marvel movies, because you have these monstrous creatures that fight each other on the planet and common humans are stuck in between. But in that sense, we're kind of irrelevant. I think the next leg is going to look potentially more like what Black Mirror has offered. So dystopian sci-fi that terrify people because it feels so real.
Right.
And then the Barbarian, The Descent, these kinds of movies that take an altered humanity, either because different branch in evolution under Earth or just because, well, sewers are gross.
Sure.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. But then again, what I can say is that there's a really nice renaissance of scary movies that's been spearheaded by a few directors, one of which is probably one of your favorites, but like what's been proposed by A24 is really interesting and has been surprising. So whatever I'm saying is like, all right, A24 surprised me. What about you? What do you think is the next, what will the next 5 years bring us, you know, or 5 or 10 years bring us in terms of monsters?
So I think, well, in terms of movie monsters, my guess is we're going to have some AI techno monster type thing that mm-hmm. comes out. You know, I think that if the Apple Vision Pro takes off, like some people hope it is going to take off, we're going to see more immersive films too. VR mm-hmm. things, movies or monsters rather, that can almost interact with us, or at least have the semblance of interaction. I think that could be really cool, especially revisiting some of the older monsters, like the xenomorph Fair. Thing that are yep. particularly adept at hiding. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's going to open up a new way of delivering this type of content, so that we can look at some of the tropes that feel tired and like zombies and whatnot mm-hmm. and say, well, how would they work better in an immersive, in a fully immersive environment? And then how can we?
So you think we're going to move away? You think we're going to move away from the traditional projection type of movie as we know it in a shared experience and move to an immersive solo experience or with a small group of people experience potentially in your own house?
I mean, I don't think it's going to be anytime soon, and I don't think projection will go away in our lifetime, but I do think we're already moving that way with Netflix and you know, people watching movies on their phones or their computers or their tablets rather than going to the mm-hmm. movie theater. So I think we're already moving in that direction, and this is just the next step. You know, I think we're going to have more interactive horror coming out, so related to video games and things like that, but now something that you can interact with that's really more of a film than a game where you're controlling an avatar or something along those lines.
Right.
And I could see some really, really cool applications of a few people sitting around a, I don't know, couch together, sitting in the same room, mm-hmm. or not even, I guess. We could watch a movie together and interact with it in the same way and have a completely different experience than if I were to watch it with somebody else or my wife or something like that.
Right.
Because we're two different people that would react or interact with it in different mm-hmm. ways. And I could see some really compelling cases for that type of horror. Ultra personalized.
Curated content.
Yeah. I don't think we're there yet, but I think we could start to see things coming out in that realm within the next decade.
Which is interesting because going back to the monster, I think the definition of the monster is it is a shared violation of your culture's understanding and ethos and concept of the universe.
Sure.
I think that's what was so interesting about the monsters is that it was not a curated content. It is meant to be terrifying for everyone. And so you had those kind of culturally bound monsters, that the Cyclops in Greek mythology, you had the vampire, you had the werewolf. And then you had some authors that came in with this cosmic horror that now is threatening just by virtue of you being part of humanity. Mm-hmm. So the boundaries, but now it's this shared humanity that faces something that is terrifying for all. And I think that the kaiju kind of tap into that, going back to like Pacific Rim, like whoever you are on the planet, if there's a huge monster that shows up in your city, that should be terrifying. You don't have to analyze this relevant to me. And I think that was like pondering, am I really afraid of Godzilla? Is a shared fun. There's something amazing about a whole room for the people jumping at the same time because of a monster that appeared on screen.
Definitely.
And none of these people like know each other or whatever, but there's this shared reaction. Is this going to be as enjoyable when it is experienced on your own, in your own bubble, or with such a small set of people? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's going to
be. Are we headed in the right direction? Different. Yeah, is it definitely different? I just wonder if we're going to strip away at something that made the movie monsters so interesting, which was this shared experience.
Sure, sure. Makes sense. I guess we will see if my predictions come true and what that entails.
Yes.
Remind me in 10 or 20 years. Yeah. Like, you remember only that episode of Dark Impression that we talked about? You were wrong, Dave. I'll buy you a beer or something if there is a virtual beer.
Yes.
Because we won't leave our house.
It curated.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like it. Cool. Well, this was a lot all of fun right. to talk about. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for coming out today, Vince, from your sabbatical cave.
Thank you for hosting me in our virtual sabbatical cave.
Yes, this is great.
Now I can go back to, you know, other things.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to A Dark Impression. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Rating and reviews make the world a scarier place. Consider leaving one wherever you get your podcasts. A Dark Impression was produced and edited by Vince and Dave. All movies are copyright their respective sources. Music is from Adobe Stock. All rights reserved.